This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I genuinely feel that South East Water are not learning from those lessons. I've been working with them now for nearly 15 years, showing my age here, but they're not learning. The communications with this particular matter have been really, really bad, too little, too late, too complicated. People just want to know when they can boil the kettle again to make a cup of tea.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first Kent Politics podcast of 2026 and the first of our bite-size editions where we'll bring you the highlights of what's been happening in the county over the past week. I'm Nikki White, Senior News Editor at the KM Media Group, and I'll be wrapping up the stories local democracy reporters Simon Finlay, Robert Boddy and Dan Essen have been working on over the past week, as well as what's been happening at Westminster. First up this week, Dan has been looking at a few councillors who have signed up for reform, and all on the same day. On Wednesday, Reform's press office sent out not one, not two, but three separate releases saying they had acquired three new councillors across Kent. Gravesham Borough Councillor Dakota Dibbin is no longer with the Conservative Party and has joined up with Nigel Farage's outfit, becoming the council's fifth Reform member. Over in Sevenoaks, long-time Tory councillor, former Mayor of Swanley and former chairman of Sevenoaks District Council Lawrence Ball also defected to Reform. And down in Thanet, Barry Manners also joined up. While he was an independent up until this week, he was elected in 2023 as a Conservative and left that party in May last year. Interestingly enough, Councillor Manners was also one of the people aboard the famous British Airways flight 149, which in 1990 landed in Kuwait during the Saddam Hussein regime's invasion of that country and was seized. He ended up spending 4 months in captivity in Iraq and has previously spoken to Kent Online about it. Needless to say, Reform's head office say they're very happy to welcome these new members to the fold. Over at Kent County Council, the long-awaited draft budget was finally published at the end of last week, after several months of delays. These would normally be expected to arrive in early to mid-November. Reform UK's first budget was held up by political indecision, if you believe the opposition parties, or by the government, which held back the results of the Fair Funding Review, which would determine how much extra cash Kent would get. As it turned out, it was better than expected, but not enough. It's never enough, is it? The ambition of the Reform UK leader of KCC, Lendon Kemkaran, was to set a council tax rise of less than the maximum government cap of 4.99%. KCC set its council tax at 3.99%, which was far lower than most of the opposition parties and journalists had expected. Political reporters at the County Hall beat were hearing 4.85%. But most observers could see a drawdown on reserves and one-off payments as a means of plugging gaps while anticipating rising costs for adult social care and special educational needs and disabilities, or SEND as it's more widely known. And Councillor Kemkaran later admitted that losing 1% of council tax revenues means the government may cut grants to the tune of £10 million, but this had been accounted for. On the face of it, she appears to have pulled it off, setting a balanced budget while not raising the council tax to the maximum amount, which chimed with last year's election literature. Critics called it performative and putting politics before people. Earlier this week, Councillor Kemkaran's deputy Brian Collins told members of the Policy and Resources Committee that the budget does not come without significant risk, and that risk comes in the form of adult social care and SEND, whose costs are rising all the time. If KCC tries to lower the cost of provision while the demand rises, this could end in tears. There may be other financial shocks, ones not yet foreseen, such as a steepening inflation or a global pandemic, but for the moment, risks and all, they have to make it work. Here's a clip from Simon explaining more about the budget to KMFM's Nicola Everett.
Well, the big headline from this is that they're proposing to increase council tax by 3.99%. Now, that's significant because it's below the cap that the government set at 4.99%, which is something that they were absolutely determined to do because of the way that it looks. Everybody was saying that Reform couldn't run a council, they couldn't do this, and they would be going bankrupt within 9 months. But what they managed to do is, on the face of it, they seem to have pulled it off, and are going to be able to at least present what appears to be a balanced budget when it goes to before the full council on February the 12th. However, The opposition will point and question to the overspend from this year, and they will question and ask for answers about the budget gap for next year, and they will be pointing to the cost of adult social care, SEND, the Home to School Transport. They're going to be asking if there is enough resistance to shocks within the budget, and they're going to ask about the state of the reserves. But on the face of it, right, and you know, people are pouring over the 94 pages of the draft budget proposals as we speak, and probably by the end of the day we'll have some very different ideas about what this is offering. But Reform UK's leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron, in a release last night, said when this administration took office, the council was facing a very serious financial situation. KCC was saddled with more than £700 million worth of debt, which equated to £84,000 a day. And pressures on vital services were continuing to grow. And she said that this is a real turning point.
When they came in, obviously, the whole DOGE thing went on, and there was a lot of talk about how they were going to save money. I know you've been looking at some of the document. It's very long and very in-depth. But can you see where savings have been made? Is it quite obvious where they've managed to claw back any cash at all?
According to Reform, she said that... since Reform got in, the authorities managed to deliver £100 million in savings and income. They have reprofiled, that's a new word on me, £40 million of future spending and reduced debt by £67 million. Now, the devil's in the detail of all of this, and that may well be true, but it's how much the bills are likely to go up by and how much they're going to have to take from reserves.
Meanwhile, in Medway this week, the repercussions of the new multi-year funding settlements became apparent, and not all for the best. The town's authority did see an increase in the money it receives from government, an increase of £23 million for its budget, which was £11.4 million more than it would have got if the Fair Funding Review hadn't been conducted. However, this wasn't as generous as Medway Council officers had been predicting when they were putting together a draft budget for the next financial year. They had anticipated the authority would receive a further £8 million on top of the £23 million, and were hopeful that with this and other work to bring the council's finances into control, Medway could avoid having to ask the government for exceptional financial support for the third year running. This avoidance of needing EFS was something council leader Vince Maple repeated several times, but now the result of the funding settlement is out, he has said this is unlikely to be possible and a third year will be necessary.
I welcome the increase that we've seen through the Fair Funding Review to Medway Council. It's a positive thing. It steps away from the years of austerity we had under both the Coalition and Conservative governments for more than a decade. That said, of course, people know that we've been in a really challenging financial set of circumstances. We're continuing to work through that. It's likely, we believe, that we'll have to access the third year of EFS. We did say that that was likely at the time when we first wrote around exceptional financial support. So we are anticipating that will be the case. We're working with officers every single day. But the nature of actually the settlement we've received, it is quite complex because it's not only a multi-year settlement, which is to be welcomed, but it's bringing together dozens of individual strands of grants into the central grant situation. So it is not a compare and contrast from last year to this year. So it is taking time. That's not, again, unique to Medway. For all councils across the region and across the country, they're taking that additional time. But I'm confident as we move forward, we'll continue the conversations with MHCLG around exceptional financial support, and we'll come forward with our budget in February.
Can this be described as a good settlement for Medway if we're still having to go to the government down the line to ask for exceptional financial support? How can that be a good settlement for this council?
Look, it's very clear that the government has inherited the financial mess that they did from the previous Conservative government. But despite that, they have prioritised reviewing and giving fair funding to local government. You know, gone are the days of Rishi Sunak standing up in a garden in Tunbridge Wells, taking money away from deprived urban areas. We've got a Labour government who's recognised deprivation as part of that process for the Fair Funding Review. Does that mean that it covers every element from a local government perspective here in Medway? Unfortunately, there's still more to do on that. So that's why we'll continue to have that conversation with government around our circumstances. When we first wrote to them some time back now, we said we anticipated the EFS for Medway, and it's different for every council, would be a three-year programme. We're in year three of that. So it was an ambition to hopefully not have to use EFS. We regrettably will have to use it, I believe, now, but we'll do so in a way recognising that the figure is reducing year on year.
So this is going to be a big gap between, well, not a huge gap, but still around £7 million or even more than that between your working assumption and this. What areas are now on the chopping block potentially in terms of cost savings because of that gap between what you hope to receive and what you've actually received?
Well, we're working through that, and we've still got nearly 2 months before we present the final budget to council at the end of February. So as you would imagine, by the nature of it, we're just a couple of working days into 2026. We received the provisional settlement on one of the last working days of 2025. Officers are working through that now. My cabinet are working every single day with their senior officers to look at options and what may be possible as we come forward. We'll do that as transparently as always. That's what we believe in as a Labour and Cooperative administration. So from that perspective, we will bring stuff forward as we move towards the February budget date, where we will set the following year's budget.
EFS is effectively the loosening of the rules so a council can borrow to cover its day-to-day spending. Medway first got this for its 2024 budget, but it did set out a roadmap where EFS would be needed for 3 years, so this isn't entirely out of the blue. However, the boost of funding had given some in the council hope that they could avoid needing all 3 years. The application for the third year of EFS has been made and will likely be approved because without it, it would likely spell effective bankruptcy.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
And lastly, onto what's been going on at Westminster. And this week, it's pretty much all been about water. At the time of recording, thousands of homes and businesses across the county are still without supplies. And regulator Ofwat has now announced it has opened an investigation into South East Water following the major outage. The body will look at whether the utility company has complied with its obligations to provide high standards of customer service and support for users since widespread issues began in November. Back then, 24,000 properties in Tunbridge Wells were left without water, and on Tuesday last week, company chief exec David Hinton appeared before the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee in Parliament to answer questions over how that crisis had been handled. The Drinking Water Inspectorate has now launched an investigation into South East Water over the disruption and says it will take appropriate enforcement action if needed. South East Water is now conducting an inquiry into itself after it challenged evidence given to the committee by the DWI, particularly that the crisis was foreseeable. Now, Mr. Hinton and Chairman Chris Train are also going to be recalled before EFRA to answer more questions at some stage. And then, you almost couldn't write this script, on the very same day Mr. Hinton was being quizzed by MPs, the taps in Tunbridge Wells went dry again, and there's been problems ever since. Here's what Tunbridge Wells MP Mike Martin had to say on Tuesday.
We've got investigations from the DWI, the Drinking Water Inspectorate, from Ofwat, from the Community Water Council, and the Select Committee today has recalled Dave Hinton and the Chair of South East Water back to Parliament because they were accused of lying to Parliament last week and they need to correct their evidence.
And what reassurances that you've been given by South East Water in terms of restoring water, and do you believe them?
I mean, I've been told all sorts of things by South East Water. I don't actually believe any of them. What I would say to my constituents in Tunbridge Wells is, based on what I know, and I obviously speaking to everyone involved in this, and based on kind of my experience of dealing with South East Water, everyone in Tunbridge Wells should really only expect full supplies to come back at the earliest this weekend. So people should think about that and plan for that. We are setting up, or we have set up, another bottled water station. We're standing in it now at Knights Park. So there's more bottled water, and deliveries for vulnerable people are going to continue, and GPs and schools are getting their deliveries as well.
How hard are you pressing the water company for clear timelines and transparency?
I mean, I do that every time I speak to them, but I get a load of guff back. So actually, the reality is about understanding the data of the reservoir levels, understanding what the department in London, the minister, is doing, understanding what the local resilience forum is doing, and piecing all that information together to get a good picture. And as I say, I think people in Tunbridge Wells should expect proper water only to return at the earliest by this weekend.
And then, just when you thought things couldn't get any worse, Storm Goretti hit, causing numerous outages across the area. Places such as Sevenoaks, Maidstone, Tunbridge, Ashford, Canterbury, Hollingbourne, Headcorn and all the surrounding areas were impacted with either no or low water pressure. This was Maidstone and Morling MP Helen Grant talking to reporter Ellie Hodgson on Tuesday.
We had the nightmare before Christmas in 2022, where many people in my constituency were without water for 12 days in the run-up to Christmas. So you can imagine the chaos. It's been really, really bad. And the annoying thing is that I genuinely feel that South East Water are not learning from those lessons. I've been working with them now for nearly 15 years, showing my age here, but they're not learning. The communications with this particular matter have been really, really bad, too little, too late, too complicated. At the end of the day, people just want to know when they can boil the kettle again to make a cup of tea, when can they take a shower. So the level of the communications has been overly complex and conflicting. They have also not been following the instructions of ministers to set up water stations. You know, we've been asking for this one in Moat Park to be set up for nearly 40 hours now. Why did it take so long? So I'm very, very disappointed and extremely concerned.
And obviously yesterday you wrote a letter alongside other local MPs, and some of the things you mentioned about livestock not getting water, priority water services, these are all things that we're hearing about today. What do they need to do, South East Water, to ensure that people are getting the right communication so that they have the water they need?
Well, better leadership and listening to what MPs are asking for, listening to ministers. And to be perfectly honest, and I don't say this lightly, they need a change of leadership. And in that letter, we've called on David Hinton to be replaced. I know he's been recalled back to the Select Committee in Parliament. And, you know, there are some very serious questions that again need to be asked about what's happened here and answered properly.
And what are the main concerns from your constituents at the moment regarding the current management of this crisis? What do your constituents say is a priority for them?
Well, they just want water. And, you know, my focus as their MP is to get their water back as quickly as we possibly can. Many have already been without water for a few days. And very worryingly, you know, in the conversation I had with ministers and South East Water this morning, you know, this isn't necessarily going to be fixed tonight or tomorrow.
Around 30,000 homes across Kent and Sussex have been affected in total, and several MPs have criticised the situation, including Tunbridge Wells Mike Martin, Maidstone's Helen Grant, Faversham's Helen Waitley and Wilds Katie Lamb. They've all said that they've lost faith in the firm's leadership. On Wednesday, Lib Dem leader Ed Davey joined in and found himself talking yet again at PMQs this week about South East Water's problems and called for the firm's licence to be revoked. Now, it's fair to say that South East Water staff have been working around the clock to drop supplies off to vulnerable people, man bottled water stations and do what they can to get the situation sorted. But to many customers, that's of little comfort when they're struggling to simply wash, clean and flush the toilet. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has described the situation as totally unacceptable and said that ministers have been holding daily emergency meetings with the company to hold it to account. If there's any good news, the government has also doubled the compensation rates for individuals and businesses, he said, and made it clear to South East Water that it must urgently invest in infrastructure. Watch this space. Okay, that's it from me for this week. My thanks to Simon, Dan and Robert for their contributions. Don't forget to join me next week for another bite-sized edition and keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. Our bumper episode, when we'll be welcoming more guests from the world of politics, returns on January the 30th. You can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5pm.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5pm or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.